Welcome to our Bible study on the Gospel of John, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. As always, I am assuming you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open before you, and that you understand our translations may not agree. I also want to invite you to our in-person Bible study on Wednesday from 5:15 until 6 p.m. in the Fellowship Hall. Please remember to wear your mask. If you have read all four Gospels, then you know the Gospel of John is very different than the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are known as the synoptic Gospels because they see, optic, things in a similar way. For example, in the synoptic Gospels, Jesus' ministry is located in Galilee, in the north, climaxed by one dramatic trip south to Jerusalem, where he is killed, and Jesus' ministry appears to last less than a year. John locates the center of Jesus' ministry in the south, in Judea, from where Jesus makes a few brief trips to Galilee. In John, Jesus is in Galilee only three times. Here in chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, in chapter 4, verses 43 through 54, and in chapter 6, pretty much the whole chapter, 1 through 71. And after chapter 7, verse 9, Jesus is always in Jerusalem or Judea. In the synoptics, Jesus attends only one festival, the Passover, at which he is killed. In John, three Passovers are mentioned, chapter 2, verse 13, chapter 6, verse 4, and chapter 11, verse 55, indicating a ministry of between 2 and 3 years. In the synoptics, Jesus teaches the disciples throughout the Galilean ministry, speaking in parables and other forms. In John, all of Jesus' teachings to his disciples is compressed in one evening, the extended monologues of the farewell discourses at the Last Supper in the Gospel of John, chapters 13 through 17. In the synoptics, what we call communion or the Lord's Supper, also known as the Eucharist, is instituted in Jerusalem at the Last Supper, which is a Passover meal. In John, the Last Supper is on the night before the Passover meal, and there are no words of institution. John's Eucharistic teaching is placed earlier, in Galilee, in connection with the feeding of the 5,000, in chapter 6, verse 51 through 58. John begins and ends his Book of Signs with symbolic scenes not found in the synoptics. The first sign is our passage today, the water into wine. The last sign is the raising of Lazarus. These signs are John's way of showing how Jesus manifests, that is, makes visible, his glory to the world. Yet Jesus is met with increasing misunderstanding and hostility that finally results in the determination to kill him. The signs point to the one great sign of Jesus' death and resurrection. But the people in the story do not understand what is really happening until the story is over. The first sign, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, our passage, and the second sign, the official son who was ill at chapter 4, verse 46, both take place in Cana. And John is the only gospel writer to mention Cana. As we look at chapter 2, verse 1 through 11, we look at these words and phrases in our passage, and we begin with chapter 2, verse 1, on the third day. Early Christian readers would hear the phrase, the third day, and think of the resurrection. So the phrase, on the third day, is more of a theological marker than a calendar marker. The wedding. The joyous celebration of a wedding is often used in the New Testament as a picture of the meaning of the eschatological, that is, the end times, salvation. Christ is the groom, The bride is the redeemed people of God. The time of engagement is over, and the intimate new life together begins. We see that in Matthew chapter 9, verse 15, and chapter 22, verses 1 through 11, in John chapter 3, verse 29, in 2 Corinthians at chapter 11, verse 2, and in Revelation at chapter 19, verse 7 and verse 9, and in chapter 22, verse 2, verse 9, and verse 17. The usual festivities consisted of a procession in which the groom's friends brought the bride to the groom's house and a wedding supper. According to Judges chapter 14, verse 12, and in the Apocrypha, Tobit chapter 11, verse 19, the festivities lasted 7 days. There was also a Jewish teaching from the Mishnah of Ketubot 1, which taught that the wedding of a virgin should take place on a Wednesday. So if John 1:39 immediately preceded the Sabbath, and remembering that for Jews the day begins at sundown, echoing the creation story of Genesis chapter 1, and it was evening and morning the first day, then the action of chapter 1, verse 40 through 42 would have taken place on Saturday evening to Sunday evening. The events of chapter 1, verse 43 through 50 on Sunday evening to Monday evening. Monday evening to Tuesday evening would have been the second day of the journey, and Jesus would have arrived at Cana on Tuesday evening or Wednesday morning. The Cana of Galilee in the New Testament, this town is mentioned only by John, here in chapter 2, and then in chapter 4, verse 46, and finally in chapter 21, verse 2. The exact location is unknown, and the site shown to tourists today is just one of several possibilities. If your Bible has a map of the Holy Land in Jesus' time, then it may list the possible site. Simply find Jerusalem, then go straight up. You might see Nazareth, and then if you continue to go straight up from Nazareth, you might see Cana. On a side note, according to chapter 21, verse 2, Nathanael is from Cana, and according to chapter 1, verse 46, Nathanael asked if anything good can come from Nazareth, possibly because he was familiar with the town. Only John and Luke mention activity by Jesus in the area near Nazareth immediately after his baptism. Mark and Matthew begin Jesus' ministry at the Sea of Galilee. The mother of Jesus is never called Mary in the Gospel of John, but the phrase mother of is an honorable title for a woman who has been fortunate enough to bear a son. There is a tradition that says Mary was the aunt of the groom, and there is an early 3rd century Latin source that identifies the groom as John, the son of Zebedee, which would agree with the tradition that the wife of Zebedee and mother of John was Salome, and she was Mary's sister, a relationship which would make John the cousin of Jesus. It seems plausible that Jesus was somehow related to someone in the wedding party. You don't just show up at a wedding. Unless the invitation came through Nathanael, who was from Cana. At chapter 2, verse 3, Jesus' mother told him. We are not told why Mary is concerned or why she turns to Jesus. Some have thought she was asking for a miracle, but there is no evidence of any previous miracles performed by Jesus. Others do not think that Mary was asking for a miracle, but was simply reporting a desperate situation. The curious point is, Jesus' answer seems to indicate he felt something was being asked of him. At chapter 2, verse 4, woman. That address sounds rude to us, but it was more normal in the Bible, and it does not mean any disrespect. It is similar to Frau in German, or lady in Old English. It's the way Jesus addresses Mary Magdalene after the resurrection in chapter 20, verse 13. It is also how he addresses his mother from the cross, chapter 19, verse 26. But having said that, it is still an unusual way to speak about one's own mother. What is also peculiar is the use of woman alone, without any accompanying title or qualifying adjective, such as dear woman or honorable woman. So all in all, this is an unusual way for a son to address his mother. What concern is that to you and me? Literally, what is there that is both to you and me? In other words, what do we have in common? The point is that Jesus does not act on his mother's bidding, reinforcing the idea that Jesus' ministry would be according to his hour, which is a recurring theme in this gospel. For example, when his brothers urge him to go up to Jerusalem at chapter 7, verse 3, he said it was not his hour. And then he went up at chapter 7, verse 10. And when Mary and Martha send word to Jesus about their brother Lazarus's illness at chapter 11, verses 1 through 7, we see he waited 2 days before going. In John's gospel, Jesus speaks and acts not in response to any claims of kinship, friendship, or need, but at his own initiative as God's will is revealed to him. Now, this pattern may seem to be without compassion, but something more than compassion is involved. In the Cana story, as well as the others, Jesus meets the need, but he does more. Compassion alone might provide wine, but grace does more. It reveals God through Jesus Christ. Remember, a sign is not a miracle meant to amaze or offer proof of Jesus' teachings. A sign points to God and what God is doing in Jesus. A sign is not evident to all. The master of the ceremony, the bride, the groom, and others did not know who was responsible for the wine, and we are not told that any of them came to believe. In fact, the only people who believed in him as a result of this miracle are his disciples, who presumably believed in him already. Continuing on, my hour, meaning the hour of Jesus' glorification, which is the hour of his crucifixion and exaltation. We see this in chapter 7, verse 30, chapter 8, verse 20, in chapter 12, verse 23 through 27, in chapter 13, verse 1, and in chapter 17, verse 1. The signs that Jesus does all point to the sign, his death and resurrection. This hour cannot be rushed and cannot come at human initiative. At verse 5, do whatever he tells you. Although there is no story of Jesus' miraculous conception in the Gospel of John, Mary seems to know of Jesus' authority and power. At verse 6, six stone jars. The use of stone jars was due to Levitical laws of ritual impurity. You can see that at Leviticus chapter 11, verse 29 through 38. Because if stone jars become ritually contaminated, they can be cleaned, whereas earthen jars would have to be broken. The Jewish rites of purification, this water was used for ceremonial purposes to remove the ritual impurity that kept people from being acceptable to God. And we can see that at Leviticus chapter 15, at 17 verse 15, at 22 verse 6, and in the Gospel of Mark chapter 7 verse 1 through 4. Symbolically, Jesus will transform the water of the old purification ceremonies into the new wine of salvation. 20 or 30 gallons. This quantity in each of the jars results in 120 to 180 gallons of wine. Remember, the jars were empty, so this is a lot of water. and they didn't have a faucet. They had a well in town, so it was likely very labor-intensive to fill the jars with water. And I'm thinking, on a more humorous note, the servants who had to fill the jars with water would have thought it a better miracle if Jesus had just filled the jars with water before changing it to wine. The quantity of wine was unheard of for a village family celebration, and reminiscent of the extravagance expected in the messianic days of salvation. And on a side note, the King James Version at verse 6 uses the word firkin, the only time it is used in the New Testament, and it is the Greek translation for the Hebrew word bath, not as in bathtub, but as in a liquid measure, equaling 8 3/4 gallons. At verse 9, some have suggested that only the water that was drawn from the jars was turned to wine. Technically, you could translate it that way, but it is not the obvious meaning of the account. At verse 10, the phrase, become drunk, reminds us that the wine used was not unfermented grape juice. It had an alcoholic content. The good wine, until now, saving the best till last, is a mark of eschatological salvation. John pictures Jesus as the climax of God's saving work. The eschatological joy is already present. Without knowing it, the master of ceremonies at the wedding festival confirms the miracle. At chapter 2, verse 11, the first of his signs. The other seven miracle stories in the Gospel of John have parallels or analogies in the other Gospels, but this story is unique in the New Testament. His disciples believed in him. This is the purpose of the signs, to generate faith. Look at chapter 20, verse 30 through 31. Yet John knows that faith based on signs can be superficial unless the believer transcends miracles and understands where the miracle stories point, to God's saving act in Jesus Christ. In conclusion, the extravagance of Jesus' act, the superabundance of wine, reminds us that Jesus' ministry begins with an extraordinary act of grace. And in that gift, we are able to catch a glimpse of the character of God. God is gracious beyond expectation, and we are richly, deeply blessed. Thank you for listening. Take care, and God bless.